Willkommen zur nächsten Ausgabe des Tax of Campus Podcast. Schön, dass ihr wieder dabei seid. Heute freue ich mich, Eric Vautrin als Gesprächspartner zu begrüßen. Neben seinem aktuellen Studium zum Executive Master in Change beim INSEAD ist Eric als Leadership Consultant und Change Agent beruflich sehr aktiv. Er blickt zurück über 15 Jahre als Projekt-, Programm- und Delivery Manager zurück. Eric hat in viele Projekte die Einführung von agilen Methodologien begleitet. Und darüber wollen wir heute reden. Welche Herausforderungen gibt es bei solchen Change-Management-Programmen? Eric ist gebürtiger Kanadier, ich bin Engländer. Deswegen haben wir gedacht, wir nutzen die Gelegenheit heute, unsere Podcast auf Englisch aufzunehmen. Hi Eric, how are you?
Hi Ashley, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks very much for taking time to come and talk to me this evening. We've actually been able to do this podcast physically, which is fantastic, with of course the correct distance between each other. If I reflect back and think back to the podcast or some of the podcasts that we've done, we've had sessions about self-organizing teams. We've had sessions about communication. We've had sessions about conflict management. I think it was the last one that we did. Yeah. But maybe to start off, let's go up a few feet. Let's take a helicopter view, and have a look. Like what's happening then really with organizations adopting agile methodology. So you've spent a lot of time talking to different organizations. So where are we there?
That's a really good question. And I think, I mean, you and I, we have share similar experience in terms of the organizations that we work with, the size of the organizations. And let's ask ourselves the question, right? How many organizations do we know right now that are talking about tribes or chapters or squads or scrum or agile? There are a lot, as we know. So across many, many different industries, we see a huge pull towards agility, the idea of agility, but also standardized, I think, models and practices around how to implement agility. So I think where we are is everyone's talking about it. And a lot of organizations are being introduced to it by large consulting companies, by organizations that have a lot of experience with this. And they're being suggested, let's say, to implement these quite well-known models of agility.
And then if we sort of look at, let's say, large organizations and reflect back, so where were they maybe 10, 15 years ago? The classical hierarchy, you had the head of the department, the project lead or the team lead and so on, And then on the flip side, we now come along with the agile approach, self-organizing and so on. How does that fit together? It's one of the questions that has been burning on my tongue to ask you, Is there like, through agile and agile methodologies, is there like a militant anti-authority, anti-hierarchy movement that we're now seeing?
In my experience, yes. I mean, there's a couple of positions, let's say militancies. There's the you could call them purists, very pure agilists, that from their point of view, there's the way that it was defined, that's the way that it was written, and that's how it should be implemented, and that's the only way. So that's one aspect of it. My experience is that they face a lot of challenges and pushback in organizations when they come in with a very sort of very focused interpretation of how things should be implemented, because the environment and the culture and the organization, as you said, that's been doing certain things for 10 to 15 years,
it's even longer probably.
Not as simple as just coming in and telling people, okay, now we're going to do things different. Now I do understand where this comes from, right? So I think we live in a very, very complex world right now, and when it comes to product development, innovation, and services, for example, and globalization, all of that, we live in a very complex world. So a certain part of us wants a simplistic answer to how are we going to change your organization mm-hmm. to compete with new, let's say, Silicon Valley or new types of organizations that are coming mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. our competitive market. So I understand, you know, that there's a pull towards that. But there's also something called a fantastic object, right? It comes from mm-hmm. psychology. It's spelled with a PH. Mm-hmm. And it's this human phenomenon and nature that we have to believe that there are things out there which are going to fix everything. Yeah, mm-hmm. the new plan, the new, yeah, the agile organization yeah, is going to fix everything.
But, yeah, but I think we've both been in projects on large scale projects where unfortunately the unicorn isn't there to fix everything. So if you look at then, let's say as you said, the pure agile approach, what pitfalls does that then bring? If you really do go there, if an organization says, okay, we're really going to do this pure agile, and then there is, let's say, that lack of hierarchy,
yeah?
I mean, are there pitfalls? Does that work? I mean, you know, I'm asking about pitfalls, but maybe I'm asking more of a binary question, yeah? In your experience, can that work?
Well, yeah, there can be cases, obviously, right? When an organization is in a really dire situation mm-hmm. in terms of their market, their market share is completely deteriorating. There's no more innovation in the organization. There can always be, and that's the thing, right? Like, if we try and fit everyone to one mold and we don't look at the situation, these are some of the pitfalls of the downsides of no matter what methodology you're trying to implement, where you're increasing the chance that it's not going to be successful. So there maybe organizations where it makes sense to be drastic in the situation that they're in, mm-hmm. or maybe. But for most organizations, I would say that's probably not the case. And the pitfalls of trying to go that approach is, well, you're going to alienate people. You're going to get, sometimes you get unconscious sabotaging of the results which the organization are trying to achieve. You're basically stirring anxieties in people mm-hmm. without actually giving them a way to manage them. And mm-hmm. If and when organizations stay at the level, this is my experience, that, well, it's just work and sort of, you know, at work, we're supposed to be able to isolate the rest of our lives and, you know, stay focused on the product and the mm-hmm. customer and whatnot. That's not reality. Yeah. Mm. We're not just, we always bring parts of ourselves into our working environment, which are not necessarily directly related to the product and all of that.
Let's come to that part, come back to that part again mm-hmm. later on as well. Yeah. So touching on we have, let's say, the organization that was hierarchical.
Yeah.
The wish to move towards agile methodologies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't just flip the switch. I can't say at the start of the fiscal year on date X, whatever it is, the 1st of April, 1st of June, whenever the fiscal year. So I can't flip the switch and say, okay, now we're agile. So what guidance or what experience have you had in terms of, let's say, making that agile transformation? Mm-hmm. Maybe if you can give us some of the experiences that you've had there and also touch on, let's say, some of the amount of time that it's taken in order to actually do that transformation.
Yeah, definitely. I think I didn't answer one of your questions before, which comes in. It slipped my mind, and it comes in well here in terms of sort of this anti-hierarchy, and it fits in a sense. Okay, so what are the pitfalls, for example, or what are the things that we can do to avoid those pitfalls? So there is a sort of anti-hierarchy. Movement, let's say, within the agile community, in my experience. Now, hierarchy can play a useful role in certain situations. And mm-hmm. as biological beings, we should also be aware that hierarchy is a part of our internal makeup, right? Mm-hmm. Our mm-hmm. brain is hierarchical, for example. Mm-hmm. It's part of the way that we function. Hierarchies are not the devil incarnate. Yeah, they're not evil. Yeah, but there is
absolutely.
Yeah. Project managers are useless at the moment. Yeah, mm-hmm. we hear that a lot. Go on LinkedIn and you're like, yeah, you see a scrum master does this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a fantastic object.
yeah.
And a project manager does this. And it's basically, it's almost an authoritarian, you know, father which doesn't trust anyone and whatnot. So a little bit to, you know, the pitfalls and how to avoid them is to see things in that simplistic sort of, you know, simplification of how mm-hmm. the world works, and to then think that you can just come in and flip the switch and say, mm-hmm. you know, we're agile, or mm-hmm. in 3 months we're going to be agile, mm-hmm. or even in a year we're going to be agile. Mm-hmm. is for most organizations not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think for me, one of the first things that I do is I look at culture. And mm-hmm. culture is not just organizational culture, it's also national culture.
Yeah, where there are tremendous differences, obviously.
Yep. Obviously, yep. right? Mm-hmm. If you work in between Canadians and Germans, for example, I've lived here for almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And the way that North Americans make decisions compared to, for example, Germans tend to be more consensus-based.
Mm-hmm.
They take more time, but once they've decided, they've decided.
Mm-hmm.
And they implement and they don't make changes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
North Americans tend to decide quicker. Mm-hmm. And then the implementation phase is really long because we change the decisions along yep. the way. Right.
Yep.
So what I do is I use the tool from the Culture Map. Yeah, so it's a book that was written by Aaron Mayer, who's also the author of the No Rules Rules, the new mm-hmm. book on the Netflix culture. So I know her from my studies, and I use her tools, for example, to look at the countries where people come from,
mm-hmm.
to understand some countries are more hierarchical, for example. Be it Japanese cultures, Indian cultures, even German culture. Yeah. In the German Mittelstand tend to mm-hmm. be more hierarchical. And that's just the first awareness in terms of before embarking on a transformation to be self-organized or flat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's understand where the people are coming from, because mm-hmm. let's mm-hmm. be aware that just telling them that things are going to be different doesn't mean that you can erase 40 years or 400 years or more of history.
No.
Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Just mm-hmm. scan it. She also, I mean, not to promote her products per se. Mm-hmm. I use her team questionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
We then do workshops. We discuss the results together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second thing, right? How do you engage with people within this transformation?
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, the most important thing is really fair process. Yeah, that's, mm-hmm. I'd say, the second element. So there's a really great podcast or YouTube from the guy who did the cultural transformation at Otto. And he also speaks about how he and their organization approached their transformation, where they didn't do the classical sort of let's look at where we have the highest costs or...
So that was going to be my next question. How do you actually decide where to start? Because again, classically, it would have been, this is the most expensive piece. This is where the highest costs are. This mm-hmm. is where the least productivity is. Yeah. So those classical, let's say classical metric measurements that we all know from the past and say, okay, we need to cut costs here. This is costing too much. So we will start with our transformation process here.
So there may be times where that's what you're going to do. You don't have a choice,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the approach that other people try and take when they have that flexibility is to say, let's actually look, engage with our organization and see where there's the most interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, where people of themselves are open, willing, interested in participating in a change program. And let's start with them. Because the idea is that from them and from their engagement, this is where we come to fair process, and that has the chance of having a positive influence and impact on their colleagues and the wider organization. So fair process is important to explain. It's not a democracy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So fair process is where you explain to your team, to your employees, the frame in which they can operate. Yeah? So we want feedback from you. Yeah? Mm-hmm. That's first and foremost, we want you to be engaged. But here's the frame. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've decided on Scrum. We've decided on whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is our budget. This mm-hmm. is our time frame to do our first iteration and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to give that frame.
Mm-hmm.
Then you explain the process. So we're going to collect feedback from you, suggestions, ideas, proposals. You have 2 weeks, for example. And then we're going to take 2 weeks to review your proposals. Mm-hmm. Within those 2 weeks, we're going to call you in, challenge you on some of the stuff, ask you to go back, right, and refine it. And then within a month, as an example, you've given us all your proposals. We're going to take 2 weeks as a management team, and we're going to make our decisions. The important thing in fair process is then you explain the reasons for your decisions, why you made those decisions, mm-hmm. and you explain what you expect from people going forward.
Yeah, and also what you've said, the actual process. I know that within a time period X, as you said, your example, 2 weeks, okay, it will take 2 weeks before the feedback comes or the decision comes.
Yeah.
But I know then it's going to come in 2 weeks and I'm not left hanging. Oh, am I going to hear something today? Am I going to hear something tomorrow? Yeah. So as you say, that the framework and the process of that clarity is there.
Yeah. It's a little bit, it's not completely identical to a court, you know, proceeding, but to a certain extent, yeah, in the realm of law, you'll get your verdict in a week, for example, right? You're not just left hanging.
Bad example, but I think for clarification, it's clear, yeah.
From the process perspective.
From the process perspective, yeah.
There's still fairness in our justice system in that sense, right? Yeah. So, and hopefully the person was innocent and they didn't do, but it's just to say, yeah, there is value in giving that clarity within the process. There's value, huge amount of value for people just to get engaged, right? And people who care about your organization, I'm always left with this idea, protect your cynics, right? Mm-hmm. The people who are the most cynical about your changes in your approach are the people who care. So give them a voice, give them a chance to state their case, but tell them the rules of the game, tell them when they're going to get an answer, why you made your decision and what you expect from them going forward. And there's a lot of research that shows that as human beings, even if it's not the decision that we had hoped for, because it was a fair process, we will get on board. And there's this very...
The baseline's there, the criteria is clear.
There's this really famous example of a study that's been repeated where they approach a stranger, for example, and they give that person $10. And they say, if you can find someone with whom you agree on a split, then you both get to keep the money. And if the person who gets it first tries to do a split of 70-30, right? So I keep $7 and you get $3, 90% of people who are offered $3 will walk away and just say, sorry, I'm not interested. Because it's not fair. Because, essentially you got the money just randomly as I did. Now, some people think, but it's $10. But they've reproduced that study with 2 weeks worth of salary. So American salary, whatever the average is, you know, if it's whatever, $800. And so, or $1,000 just to round it up. So if I'd approach you as a stranger and be like, hey, you can get $300. And then we have that discussion. 90% of people still walk away from the $300 because it doesn't feel fair. So culture, know your culture, fair process. And the funny thing about saying know your culture, one of the dimensions of culture is how we communicate. So we have what's called low context cultures and high context cultures. Now in low context cultures, like Canadians, we explain, we repeat, we send an email afterwards to make sure everyone has understood. And in high context cultures, like the Japanese, the Indians, the Russians, for example, most communication is between the lines. It came to mind as I was repeating again the step, you know, I said, so we start with culture, then we go for fair process. That's why I start with culture, because it's about understanding one another and how we operate on these dimensions. And the last one is psychological safety. And that's not something for which there's a clear and easy recipe, right? But psychological safety within teams and organizations is what allows people to fail and to not be afraid that they're going to be crucified in front of the entire organization. It's what eventually allows people to be a little bit vulnerable, right? And to maybe say, look, you know, I'm going through this outside of work, and it's making it difficult for me to focus and to really be myself. And you see where teams have developed that psychological safety and those connections, that colleagues will be like, hey, of course, don't worry about it. I've got your back. Things are good on my side. I'll take the extra responsibility. I'll do the extra work. You take care of your family or whatever it may be, because they know that
it'll be the other way around at some point in time.
It will be, right? And so psychological safety, and coming back to timing. So fair process, you can sort of time box if you'd like to do a process. But psychological safety, for me, if within 3 to 5 months, right, with a new team, I get them, work with them to the point where they can start to open up a little bit about themselves and, you know, be more vulnerable in that sense, in terms of maybe things that they didn't do to their own level of standard, or things that affected the team and what they were trying to accomplish. And we can get to 3 to 5 months, right? Get to that type of conversation. That's a good start.
But you said that for fair process, you can time box it, which on one hand, I understand that. But then if we put that, say, in the dimension of an organization really transforming. So you said they had the 5 months for the psychological safety. So the fair process piece,
right?
Say Would it be right to say maybe the first step is then 3 months? Or are you, I'm trying to understand out of your experience, what's like the, let's say, the total life cycle of the transition? You can't answer that question.
Yeah.
I guess that you were going to, but in terms of, you know, just sort of some, you know, how long should people sort of understand, okay, it's going to take it, let's say, I'll say at least 12 months, 18 right. months. So like what sort of, without saying obviously, yeah, it's going to be, it's always going to be 13 months, understand yeah. that. But in terms of giving some sort of indication of, okay, what sort of time is needed for a successful transition?
So if I believe if you're in a leadership position, right, within the transformation, the first thing is you need to sort of realize that you're making a life commitment towards psychological safety.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I see these two things running in parallel in the sense that organizations have a goal within a year, we have to reduce or expand mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That ties into fair process.
Mm-hmm.
That tells people this is the frame. We have a year to do this, people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if we don't, maybe none of us have a job, right? Or yeah, it's mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the market organizational, let's say, reality in that sense. That can be time boxed. Doesn't mean you're going to achieve 100% of what you had set out to achieve. It can be a direction. If you get 80% of it, for example, or 90%, yeah, maybe it's good enough for the first year, for example, but you can have your targets and your direction. The underlying part about actually bringing people towards being self-organized and having, you know, psychological safety and being able to really connect with one another and give each other, you know, mm-hmm. negative feedback, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is really, and you had, you know, the podcast on conflict, for example.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this cultural dimension, how do we give ourselves feedback directly, indirectly? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I come from a feedback sandwich culture.
Mm-hmm.
The good, the not so good, and the good afterwards, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I give feedback. Even, mm-hmm. but Germans, for example, a lot of my friends and colleagues, they feel like that's just stringing them on.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me what it is you want me to change, yeah. right? And I'm fine and I'll work on it. So the fair process part can have iterations, right? And mm-hmm. can be time boxed and have goals and what you want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
The transformation, yeah, a fundamental transformation of the organization and the people and how they interact with one another. And if they take personal, you want them to take personal accountability, responsibility, that they may fail, that it may cost the company money, that, you know, all these things. Oh, I mean, you can't, that's like a lifelong commitment to me. You mm-hmm. really, as a leader and as a manager, you have to say, this will never end.
Mm-hmm.
Creating psychological safety, spending the time to understand where people are at, what are the challenges that they're facing. That's like, that should never stop, right? Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. you have the objectives that you're working on, yeah? And then you also see what works and what doesn't. This comes back a little bit to how I approach change, which is not militant in that sense, right?
To get back to my favorite question, yeah.
It's a direction,
yeah.
So we may come into an organization and say, look, these are the tools that are available to us, right? We have mm-hmm. Kanban, we have Scrum, we have daily stand-ups, we have... I worked with an organization where... we agreed to one retro every 2 weeks to start with, mm-hmm. right? And it took us time to get to the point where we could give ourselves some negative feedback mm-hmm. in terms of how we could improve. And time is 3, 4, 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's one team within the organization, right?
So if you expand that then into multiple teams or squads or tribes in the organization, then that, yeah. I mean, I think, again, we could probably talk for hours about this, but I mean, I think some of the things that I've taken, well, four things we have taken away, say the cultural dimension mm-hmm. to look at, that fair process, really making sure that people are clear about, or the framework is clear there, the psychological safety. And then the fourth thing that I've taken away, it's a process that takes time. So you can't expect, say, to flip the switch and say, tomorrow as an organization, we're agile, we're self-organizing, and it will work. So really be prepared to invest the time have that communication with the people, understand, talk to them, explain why these things are happening, as you said, explain what's needed, what's required, accept the feedback, and really then stick with that. So, you know, don't think, okay, in 6 months we're going to be done, that it really is a process that needs to be to be taken over, really over a longer period of time.
And part of that is the role of whoever is leading the transformation, the executives and also, let's say, the managers. They have to change how they enact their role, right? Spending the time on fair process, psychological safety, having the view that this is not a 3-month thing and then I'm done, right? You have to basically incorporate that into the role of the person. Now, we all very easily take different roles in our lives. We're the same person, but when you're husband or father or partner, right, or you're employee, or you're still the same person who can play all these different roles, and each role has its set of expectations, conditions, and also what we've learned, based on many different factors, but what we've learned is part of that role, right? So what I do, what we do is we tend to work with the role of the managers. It's not, there's this expression that if you change the actors in a play, but the play doesn't change, it's not the actors. It's the script, it's the role. So we tend to work with the role to get them to to change or to understand and to come into that space, which is like, yes, we have the organizational targets and we're going to keep moving on that, but my role within the fair process, the psychological safety, the cultural part, is something which is continuous, right? And it's not something I'm going to solve. It's something that I'm going to keep working with for the rest of my career. It's often the case why organizations also bring in externals. This is the role that we are used to playing, that we enjoy playing, right? And that we've been over 10, 15 years experimenting. I mean, I'm sure, I know it's the same for you. I've been in projects with 14 different cultures.
Yeah, we've been in similar projects like that.
And this is often why externals are brought in to help, let's say, with this process. I mean, the ultimate goal is you don't want me to be there forever. You want me to be there long enough to
And a catalyst to start the change.
Give the right, let's say, help people to understand where they are, how they can work together. Bring them, then you leave them do, for whatever, 3 months, 6 months, and then often we maybe call back and say, hey, we made huge progress, things have really, really changed, but now maybe conflict. And now
we need to drill down on this.
We don't know how to so it's a multi-year thing. Definitely in the size of organizations that we work in. There's also, I mean, this maybe touches something a little bit different, but as the age of the workforce also changes, right, that may change the whole dimension of cultural change. And
sure, there's another factor that plays in.
So we start to see that also more and more. But even in that case, and maybe you have another podcast on the or maybe you covered it already, some of the challenges of flat organizations and what the expectations of young people are in terms of career progression.
That's something maybe that we can pick up on another one, Eric. And fascinating insights, absolutely fascinating insights. And I think that there's some really great impulses that you've given. I think we've just been talking about, I think it will get a lot of people thinking about, so what does this change actually mean? Thanks very, very much for your time, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
And look forward to seeing you again in the future. Take care.
Thanks.
Ciao.
Bye.
TaxSoft Campus Podcast. Their podcast for software and IT professionals. Im TaxSoft Campus Podcast beschäftigen wir uns mit einem breiten Themenspektrum, um euch zu helfen. Praxisfragen zu Technologie, aber genauso Fragen zu Umsetzung, Prozessen oder Projektorganisation. Danke, dass ihr dabei wart. Euer TaxSoft Campus Podcast Team.